Jacob makes a discovery. As often as he could, Jacob came to speech with Rachel. But that was seldom enough, for both were busy during the day, and in particular, Jacob found himself in the position of a man whose heart is filled with a single matter, which he would fain make the sole concern of his days, yet is compelled to hard labor precisely for the sake of his love, and in that labor must even forget his love, and thus again do violence to it. For a man of feeling, such as Jacob was, that is hard indeed. For he would gladly have rested in feeling, and made it his life, yet might not, but must play the man, precisely in honor of his feeling, since if he did not, how should he else have honored it? Of course they were really one and the same, his love for Rachel and his work for Laban, for if he did not succeed in this, how should he in the other? Laban must be convinced of the full value of his nephew's claim, and be eager to attach him to himself. In a word, Jacob must not put to shame the blessing of Isaac, for it was the part of a man to do his utmost not to make a shame of the blessing, but rather to bring to honor the feeling of his heart. In the beginning, the meadow where he watched his uncle's sheep was not far, not more than an hour from his uncle's house. He went thither every morning with food in his shepherd's pouch, a sling in his belt, and armed with a long crook, and stopped there all day with the dog Marduka. This had the advantage that he could sleep at home, driving his flock in at sunset and putting his best foot foremost all the evening. He was glad of this, for otherwise his shepherding would have left him little chance to convince Laban that he had taken a blessing into his household with the runaway nephew. Not a lamb was missing when, at folding time, he let the flocks pass under his crook into the pen beneath Laban's eyes. He taught the young lambs to feed so early that he saved Laban much in milk and curds. And by dint of skill and devotion, he cured one of the two he-goats, a fine breeder, of the pox. But Laban took all these achievements as the service due from a capable shepherd, and expressed no gratitude, either then, or when Jacob, soon after he entered upon his tasks, fitted the ground-floor windows with pretty lattices. He refused to pay for whitewash for the walls, and Jacob had to give up the idea of marking his advent with so signal an improvement to the appearance of the steading. He was at his wit's end how to testify to the blessing, but the inward tension produced by all his ardent desires and searchings may have prepared him for revelations, and made him the instrument of an event of far-reaching importance, which all his life long he thought back upon with joy. He found water near Laban's cornfield, living water, a subterranean spring. Found it, as he well knew, by the Lord's help, though the miracle was attended by somewhat offensive manifestations, which were apparently a concession of his pure essence to the local spirit and the ideas current in the region. Jacob had just been talking with the lovely Rachel outside of the house, and his language had been as frank as it was gallant. He had told her that her charm was like to that of the Egyptian Hathor, or of Isis, or the beauty of a young heifer. The light of her womanliness shone round her, he poetically said. She was like a mother nourishing with humid warmth the good seed, and to have her for wife and to beget sons of her was his dearest desire. She listened with a chaste and noble charm. The cousin and bridegroom had come. She had proven him with her eyes, and loved him with all her youthful readiness for love. With her head between his hands, he asked her whether she too would rejoice to give him children. She had nodded, and the sweet black eyes had brimmed with tears, and he had kissed these tears from her eyes. Their moisture was still on his lips. In the twilight, between daylight and moonlight, he had gone out to the meadows. Suddenly, he felt his feet held and pulled back, while a strange twitching ran from his shoulder to his toes like a flash of lightning. Straining his eyes, he saw close in front of him a most strange figure. It had the body of a fish, glistening, silvery, slippery in the moonlight and the daylight, and its head was a fish's head. But beneath that, and covered by it, as by a cap, was a human face with a ringleted beard, and the creature likewise had human feet growing out of its fish-tail, and a little pair of arms. It was stooping down and seeming to draw something from the ground in a pail, which it held with both its hands, to pour it out and draw it full again and again. Then it tripped a few steps sideways on its little feet and glided into the earth. At least it vanished. Jacob understood at once that the shape was Ea Oannes, god of the water depths, lord of the middle earth and of the oceans above the deeps, to whom the people hereabouts ascribed their possession of almost all they knew that was worth knowing, considering him very great, as great as Eliel, Sin, Shamash, and Nabu. Jacob, of course, knew that he was not so great in comparison with the highest known of Abram, in the first place for the reason that he had a shape, and even an absurd one. He knew that if Ea had appeared to him to show him something, it could only be at the instigation of Yah, the one and only, Isaac's God, who abode with him. But what this lesser God had indicated to him by his gestures was nonetheless of great importance, in itself, and also in all its issues and ramifications, and he pulled himself together and ran to the court to fetch tools, and roused up Abcheba, the 20-shekel man, to help him, and dug half the night, slept for an hour, and then went on digging, until to his distress he had to drive out the sheep and leave his labors for the whole day. He could neither stand nor lie nor sit that day while he pastured Laban's flock. It was still some time to the beginning of the winter rains and the resumption of field work. Everything was burnt up. Laban paid no further attention to the fields, but worked in the court, so that he did not come to where Jacob was, and knew nothing of the activities which the latter resumed that evening and continued by the light of the rising moon until Ishtar appeared. He dug at several points within a small circumference, and went deep down through clay and stone in the sweat of his brow. But when the eastern sky grew bright, before ever the sun had pushed its rim over the horizon, lo, the water gushed up. The spring spurted forth in great force. It leaped up 3 spans high inside the hole, and began to fill the hastily dug and shapeless ditch. It sprinkled the earth round about, and its waters tasted like the treasures of the lower world. Then Jacob prayed. Yet even as he prayed, he ran to find Laban. When he saw him from afar, he went more slowly, came up and greeted him, and said with bated breath, "I have found water." "What sayest thou?" asked Laban, the corner of his mouth going down. "A spring from beneath the earth," was Jacob's reply. "I have dug it between the court and the field. It gusheth up the height of an ell."
"Thou'rt possessed."
"No. The Lord my God showed me, according to my father's blessing. Let my uncle come and see." Laban ran, as he had run at the announcement of Eliezer's coming, the rich wooer. Long before Jacob, who followed more slowly, he was at the ditch, gazing.
"That is running water," he said with some emotion.
"Thou sayest it," Jacob agreed.
"How hast thou done this?"
"I had faith and dug."
"This water," said Laban, without lifting his eyes from the ditch, "I can lead on my field in an open channel and water it."
"It will be very good," responded Jacob.
"I can," Laban went on, "say to Isulanu's sons at Haran that I renounce the contract which I have with them, for that I have no more need of their water."
"Such a thought had passed likewise through my mind," said Jacob. "Moreover, thou canst dig a pond and wall it in, and plant a garden with date palms and all kinds of fruit trees, as figs, pomegranates, and mulberries. If thou thinkest well, thou canst plant likewise pistachio trees, pears and almonds, and put in a few strawberry trees, and thou wilt have from the dates the flesh, the sap, and the kernel, and the pith of the palm for food, the leaves for woven work, the ribs for many household uses, the bast for weaving and rope-making, and the wood for building." Laban said nothing. He did not embrace the bearer of the blessing, nor fall down before him. He said nothing. He stood, turned on his heel, and went. Jacob, too, departed, sought and found Rachel, who sat milking in his stall. He told her all, and how that now they might in all likelihood have children together. They took each other by the hands and danced about and sang, Hallelujah! Jacob sues for Rachel. When Jacob had been a month with Laban, he came before his master and said that now Esau's wrath must be sensibly abated, he, Jacob, had somewhat he must say.
Hear me before thou speakest, responded Laban, for I had in mind to speak unto thee. Lo, now, thou art a month in my service, and we have made offerings together on the roof by the new moon, the half moon, the full moon, and the day of vanishing. In this time I have taken, besides thee, 3 hired servants, for a term, whom I pay according to the law. For water hath been found, not without thy aid, and we have begun to wall in the spring and lay the runnels of bricks, and we have measured off the pond that is to be dug, and if we shall plant a garden, there is much labor and the strength of many arms required, thine and theirs whom I have hired, whom I feed and clothe and reward with each 5 seahs of corn daily. Until now thou hast served me without reward, out of kinship and love, according to our contract. But lo, we will make a new contract, for it is no longer right before gods and men that the strange servants should be rewarded, and thou, because thou art my nephew, serve me for naught. Tell me, therefore, what shall thy wages be? For I will give thee what I give the others, and somewhat more if thou wilt seal to sojourn with me for as many years as the week hath days, and, as one counts, until the ploughland lie fallow and the earth rest, that man neither sows nor reaps. Thus shalt thou serve me 7 years for the reward which thou demandest. Such was the speech of Laban, and the course his thoughts took. Plausible speech, clothing plausible thoughts. But the thoughts, and not only the words, of the earth-bound man are only a garment and a gloze for his inner hopes and desires, which he clothes in plausible form, so that he is prone to lie even before he speaks. And his words have such an honest ring because it is the thoughts that are false, and not they. Laban was downright horrified to hear that Jacob wished to go, for since the finding of the spring he had known that Jacob was in truth a bearer of blessings, a man with a lucky hand, and that he must do his uttermost to bind him to him, for thus his affairs would prosper from the blessing which the other bore with him wheresoever he came. The finding of the spring was a mighty blessing, so full of consequence that it was only one of its boons, not the greatest, that had freed Laban from his heavy tribute to Esalanu's sons. They had made all sorts of excuses, declaring that without their water Laban could never have planted his field, and therefore, whether he used it or not, he owed the oil, the corn, and the wool, he and likewise his posterity, forevermore. But the judge feared the gods and declined in Laban's favor, which Laban was inclined to interpret as another manifestation of Jacob's God. And now there was much under way and in progress, much undertaken, for which the blessing was requisite for its prosperity and success. The economic relation between the two was altered in the nephew's favor. Laban felt he needed him. Jacob was well aware of the fact, and could bring pressure by his threat of leaving, which Laban's practical sense was prepared to take into account. Thus, even before Jacob had applied it, Laban anticipated the pressure by acknowledging that the conditions of Jacob's servitude were unworthy of him, and taking the words out of his mouth by his fair proposals. Jacob knew, nobody better, that he could not dream of leaving, that the circumstances were by no means ripe. He rejoiced that his uncle conceded that the nephew had the whip hand, and felt grateful to him for meeting him halfway, though well knowing that the offer was prompted not by love, but by self-interest. He even felt grateful to him for the interest which bound the other to him. For man is so constituted that the friendliness which is the outward expression of the interest will often elicit a loving response. But more than all, Jacob loved Laban for the sake of that which he had to give, and for what he thought to demand of him, for it was greater than much corn and many shekels. He said, My father and brother, if thou wilt that I shall stay here and return not to Esau, even though he be now appeased, but serve thee, then give me Rachel thy child to wife, and let her be my meed. For in beauty she is like to a young heifer, and she looks upon me with kindness. We have spoken together, and have said to each other that we would have children together after our likeness. Give her then to me, and I am thine. Laban was not at all surprised. I have already said that he had begun by thinking of Jacob as a wooer, and only on account of Jacob's plight had the thought slipped into the background of his mind. It was not strange that his nephew, now that his position had so greatly improved, should bring up the idea. And also it was not unpleasing to the clod to realize, as he did at once, that the tactical advantage passed thereby once more into his hands. For Jacob, in confessing that he loved Rachel, put himself again, as it were, in Laban's power, and weakened the pressure of his threat to leave. But what annoyed the father was that Jacob spoke of Rachel, only of her, and passed over Leah entirely. He answered, So I should give you Rachel? Yes, Rachel. She too would have it so. Not Leah, my elder child? No, she is not quite so dear unto my heart. She is the elder, and the next to woo. Truly, she is somewhat older. She is likewise of fine figure and bearing, despite some small defects, or just on account of them, and she would probably be fruitful in bearing me children such as I desire. But my heart hangs upon Rachel, thy younger child, for she is to me like Hathor and Isis. She is radiant in womanly charm, like Ishtar, and her sweet eyes follow me whithersoever I go. Lo, an hour since my lips were wet with tears which she had shed for me. Give her to me, then, and I will labor for thee. Certainly it is better I should give her to thee than to a stranger, Laban said. But shall I then give Leah, my elder, to a stranger? Or shall she wither without a husband? Take first Leah, take both. Thou art of a kindly heart, said Jacob. But let it not affront thine ears, if I say that Leah speaks not to my man's desires, but on the contrary, and my service hath to do with Rachel alone. Then Laban looked at him a while with his afflicted and drooping eyes, and said gruffly, As thou wilt. Then seal unto me that thou wilt sojourn 7 years with me, and serve me for this reward. 7 times 7, Jacob cried. A jubilee in the name of the Lord. When shall the wedding be?
After 7 years, answered Laban.
We can imagine the start Jacob gave. What? He cried. I should serve thee for Rachel 7 years, and before thou givest her to me?
How else? Responded Laban, as though in astonishment. I should be a fool to give her to thee at once, that ye might be up and off when it pleased thee, do what I would. Or where is the purchase price, and the dowry, and the fitting mourning presents thou wilt give me, that I may bind them to the bride's girdle, and they remain unto me according to the law, in case thou drawest back from the marriage? Hast thou them by thee, the miners of silver and the other matters? Or where are they? Thou art as poor as a field mouse, and poorer. And so let it be signed and sealed before the judge that I sell thee the wench for 7 years that thou wilt serve, and the payment will be when it has been earned. And we will lay the tablet below with the other tablets, and entrust it to the charge of the teraphim. A hard-hearted uncle, ejaculated Jacob, hath the Lord given to me.
Words, was Laban's reply. I am as hard as the situation permits me to be, and if it require, then I shall be softer. But thou wilt have the wench to wife. Go then without her, or else serve.
I will serve, Jacob said.